My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
There is one last chance to double your impact when you donate during this May fundraiser. It's Match Monday, and the Investors Challenge Fund is matching donations, today only, up to $25,000. We need to put every dollar of these funds to use for our newsroom in the months ahead so we can keep you and people across the country informed. Give right now and generously at marketplace.org/donate. Duly noted, more people this year had to break glass in case of emergency on their retirement money. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The idea is to save retirement money for retirement, right? But there are ways to use the money if you're in a jam. And there's word the percentage of people making what are called hardship withdrawals from their retirement accounts ticked up in the summer into fall quarter. The percentage rose to 2.3%. This is new data from one company, Fidelity Investments. As Marketplace's Henry Epp reports, those withdrawals can have long-term consequences.
Fidelity's report finds eviction, foreclosure, and medical bills are the most common reasons people pulled money from their retirement savings. But those who do are the ones who are most likely to need that cash later, says Teresa Ghilarducci, a professor of economics at the New School.
My research has shown that people who have taken out any kind of withdrawal over the course of their work life are much more likely to be poor when they retire.
In the short term, however, pulling from retirement savings might be the prudent option for people, says Angie Chen at Boston College's Center for Retirement Research.
The flip side that we're often missing is that maybe that's preventing them from building up credit card debt or other forms of debt.
But the fact that some Americans are facing the choice between taking on debt and drawing from their retirement points to a bigger problem, that many workers are simply unable to save any money for emergencies. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
Another way to gauge the economy, how much are people and businesses willing to spend on long-lasting, expensive things? Orders for durable goods are due next hour. And if you ignore volatile defense or transportation goods, durable orders have been rising all year. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more on why we pay attention.
A durable good is an expensive, long-lasting piece of equipment, an appliance, a computer, a metalworking tool. So if you're going to shell out the money for one,
more than likely, you're pretty confident in your overall economic environment.
That's Chad Moutre, chief economist with the National Association of Manufacturers. So far this year, durable goods orders have hovered around their pre-pandemic level. That's a sign companies still feel comfortable spending on them, says Kathy Bosjancic, chief economist at Nationwide.
In other words, the economy is still expanding and doing quite well.
But companies aren't loading up on durable goods either. For one, next year's economy is uncertain. And two, companies tend to borrow for these purchases. And right now, interest rates are high.
Let's say the Fed had to raise rates another time or so. All of that weighs on corporate leaders' decisions as they allocate money towards investment.
Bosjancic says if durable goods orders slow down, so will the economy. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
We're also following the fight over control of the ChatGPT company, OpenAI. After being fired by the board on Friday and finding a nice job quickly at Microsoft, Sam Altman is now going back to run the first company after OpenAI's employees moved to quit en masse in protest. The power of everyone leaving at once is a tech industry tradition with specific roots in Silicon Valley. In 1957, eight of the best and brightest from the first transistor company in that valley all left at once because their boss, William Shockley, was horrendous to work with. The traitorous eight, as they were called, left Shockley to start Fairchild Semiconductor, and later some started Intel Corporation. The asset of being able to leave is sometimes called defection capital. Our coverage of Sam Altman's return is in the Marketplace Morning podcast if you miss it on the air today. there is one last chance to double your impact when you donate during this May fundraiser. It's Match Monday, and the Investors Challenge Fund is matching donations, today only, up to $25,000. We need to put every dollar of these funds to use for our newsroom in the months ahead so we can keep you and people across the country informed. Give right now and generously at marketplace.org/donate.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Tomorrow, November 23rd, is Turkey or Tofu Turkey Day here, you will have noticed. But today, November 22nd, is Kimchi Day in South Korea. Fermented, tangy, spicy vegetables with Napa cabbage at the core, kimchi. November is a time where communities gather in Korea to make kimchi in bulk to get through the winter. The BBC's David Tan filed this for us.
Our kimchi recipe came from this really warm-hearted Korean mother. We tried to keep that authenticity based on recipe that my mother had.
This is Zoe Yoon, sales manager at Mr. Kimchi. She started the business with her husband using her mother's recipe in 2013. But their history goes a little further back.
Back in 1997, I remember people coming into the house bringing their own containers, and she used to put her kimchi into the containers.
Zoe's mother was one of many Korean expats who brought their kimchi recipe overseas. And from there, kimchi went beyond Korean communities. And now, it's not just Koreans who are making kimchi from scratch. Tina Benson is the owner of Kimchi With Everything, based in London.
So I lived in Japan for a while and then living in different parts of Asia. So when I came back to the UK, you know, prior to COVID, I couldn't get hold of any kimchi and it was really frustrating. So it kind of really started from that, and then it progressed into a business. I've kind of kept the recipe very, you know, much like the Korean way.
In Aberdeen, Scotland, Arthur Serini, director and co-founder of Crafty Pickles, took a slightly untraditional approach.
We started with just making a kimchi-style sauerkraut. So all the ingredients that you normally find in a kimchi just made into a sauerkraut instead. So more think of like a kimchi slaw a little bit. I felt like it was maybe a bit more widely accepted by Western palate, especially up in Aberdeen, Scotland, where anything fermented was quite foreign.
So how do you feel about people who might say, this is not kimchi? This is...
Fake. Yes. So we've had a few people that, and then that's why we direct them to the name kimchi style sauerkraut. Some people would call it cultural appropriation, but it's just something we enjoy eating.
But how do some of the Koreans feel about this non-traditional kimchi? Here's Dan Soo, managing director at Korea Foods, largest importer of Korean food in Europe.
There's this horrible misconception that authentic food is the only food. Well, actually, as long as it's good, it doesn't really matter to an extent. As long as it isn't marketed as authentic, I'm fine with it. I think people always associate kimchi with Korea. We do make pasta dishes in the UK. That doesn't make it British, still associated with Italy, or pastas associated with Italy.
I'm the BBC's David Ken for Marketplace.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking? Online I see a bunch of cool stuffing recipes that use kimchi, Asian pear juice, vegetable broth, suitable for poultry. Why not? In New York, I'm David Brancaccio, Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.